Hello, hello, and welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast, where we interview entrepreneurs, speakers, innovators, and authors. And today we have a special guest, an author, a sports book author. As you guys know, I am a sports fan. I cover sports on the Sportscast, and I have Gary Myers today. He's the author of the book Brady versus Belichick. One of the most respected voices in sports journalism, Gary is. He is a New York Times bestseller author and a veteran NFL insider with more than four decades of experience covering the league. Gary has authored several acclaimed football books, including Brady versus Manning and The Catch, but his latest work, Brady versus Belichick, may be his most definitive yet. In it, he pulls back the curtain on the greatest dynasty in NFL history, exploring the fascinating and complex partnerships between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Gary, welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Hey, Santiago, it's great to be with you.
So, Gary, can you tell us a little bit about this latest book?
Yeah, I mean, I got the idea that, this is like the most fascinating unanswered debate that I can remember in all the years I've covered the NFL, that when you have the coach who's now considered the greatest coach in NFL history and the quarterback who's considered the greatest quarterback in NFL history, and they accomplished so much together. How do you decide who deserves the most credit? I just never believed it was, I know they needed each other, but ultimately it was not a 50-50 split, which a lot of people, want to take a cop out and just say, it was an equal partnership. Well, for at a period of time, it probably was, but ultimately I think one was more responsible than the other. And I just talked to as many people as I could, and it was kind of a fun project to do.
What is like the biggest thing that you hear a lot from people about this Brady and Belichick relationship?
Well, just that it evolved over the years, where they Tom was very thankful and appreciative that Belichick drafted him, because as everybody remembers, he nearly slipped through the entire 2000 draft and would have had to go try to sign on somewhere as an undrafted free agent. And then when Tom stepped in his second year, when Bledsoe got hurt and won a Super Bowl, in reality, he really saved Belichick's job, because he went into that season thinking if he didn't turn things around after a 5-11 first year, that he was going to get fired by Robert Kraft. So, Belichick threw Brady a career lifeline by drafting him and then keeping him as a fourth-string quarterback and then sticking with him when Bledsoe was healthy. And to return the favor, Brady helped win a Super Bowl and get everybody off Belichick's back in New England, and they went on to do amazing things together. So I think the first, 5 or 6 years, it was somewhat of a mutual admiration society, and they won three Super Bowls in the first year, 4 years that Tom was the starting quarterback. But as things went on over the years, I think Tom got tired of being coached so hard by Belichick and being picked on in meetings, because Belichick was trying to make a point. If I can pick on a three-time Super Bowl champion, I can pick on anybody. And so as Tom Sr. told me, it seemed to be more on Belichick's part an expectation rather than an appreciation. And I think at the end, Tom couldn't play one more day, one more game for Belichick, and that really led to the split.
Yes, we'll get into that split a little bit later in this episode. But tell us from the draft perspective, why did Bill Belichick chose Tom Brady? Was just a quarterback was there, you picked him, or did he did some research on him and that's why he drafted him?
It was all Dick Rabein, who was the quarterback coach. He's the one that fell in love with Brady before the draft. He was actually campaigning for Belichick to take him a lot earlier than the sixth round. And I think that Belichick finally agreed to do it, because when he looked at his draft board in the sixth round at the 199th pick, Brady was all the way up here. And the next best rated player was considerably lower. I mean, they had a better than a sixth round grade on Brady, but they had Drew Bledsoe. So, and they had a lot of holes to fill. So Belichick didn't feel the need to take a quarterback any earlier than that. So those who say that Brady, you know, I'm sorry that I've done this so many times now, saying Brady when I mean Belichick and Belichick when I mean Brady, and throw Bledsoe in there. There's too many B's. But I think that if Belichick truly knew what he was getting, he would have taken him in the first round. But he had no idea what he was getting. And, you know, the fact that he was passed over 198 times and six teams to quarterbacks before Brady went to New England, you know, it wasn't a genius move on Belichick's part. I'll just give him credit for recognizing him in training camp that first summer that this guy is, you know, I don't know why he was rated so low, but he's a lot better than anybody thought. So he stuck with him. And then, you know, no teams keep four quarterbacks, but Belichick did not want to risk passing him through waivers to get him on the practice squad. And the Patriots had a lot of salary cap problems. Brady presented an option for an opportunity to have cheap labor in an important position. And so he made the team and it turned out to be a pretty good decision.
Pretty good decision. Coach Belichick is known for his defense.
Mm-hmm.
Did he want an average quarterback or an all-star quarterback? Like, what was his mindset when it came to quarterbacks back then?
Well, I think he just knew that he didn't want Drew Bledsoe. He was not a fan of Bledsoe. And, you know, the owner, Robert Kraft, had signed Bledsoe just a few months before 2001 training camp to a 10-year contract for $103 million, $103, which was the largest contract in NFL history to that point. And then Brady proceeded to completely outplay Bledsoe in training camp in 2001, Brady's second season. And I think that Belichick's idea of a quarterback was just a guy who was not going to continue to put the defense in a poor position and, you know, create short fields for the other team's offense. And, you know, Bledsoe was one of those gunslingers that turned the ball over a lot. And Belichick, after that training camp in 01, I think he really wanted to start Brady for the season opener, but didn't have it in him to make the change there because the owner had just given him Bledsoe that huge contract. And, you know, if you remember, Santiago, you're too young to actually have lived through this, but when Belichick was in Cleveland and he benched Bernie Kosar, who was a local hero, the city basically wanted to run Belichick out of town. Now, he made the right decision because Bernie Kosar was not as good a player as Vinny Testaverde at that point, but nobody in Cleveland wanted to know about it. And so when he wanted to actually bench Bledsoe at the start of the 01 season, not only did his owner sign Bledsoe to that big contract, but he thought back to what he went through in Cleveland, and he didn't have the security to go through another Kosar situation. And then Bledsoe winds up suffering a really serious injury in game two, which gave Belichick the opportunity to play Brady, which is what he really wanted to do.
Interesting story there. After winning that first Super Bowl, Gary, did Bill Belichick said, yes, that Tom Brady is the man. He is our QB1. Was he very confident after that Super Bowl win?
Well, yeah, I think so, because he wound up trading Bledsoe within – to show you how little he thought of Bledsoe, he traded him within the AFC East. If you're afraid of a quarterback, you make sure not only do you don't trade him in the division, but you trade him to a different conference. Kind of like Jerry Jones would have preferred to trade Michael Parsons out of the NFC and certainly didn't want to trade him to Green Bay, but their offer was, you know, significantly better than anything else he might have received. And I still haven't heard of any other teams offered on Michael Parsons, but the fact that Buffalo was willing to trade a number one for Bledsoe and Belichick didn't think that much of him to begin with, that was an easy decision for him to make. And clearly, after Brady led that game-winning field goal drive in the Super Bowl at the end, he was completely sold on Brady.
It was a fantastic win. David versus Goliath. I remember that Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I was in high school at the time, so it was really special. It was after like 9/11.
Right.
So it had a lot of like the emotions were definitely up back in the day. And then they won their second Super Bowl in 2003. Gary, was that the start of saying this Patriots team is the real deal, going to win a couple more? Tell us about that second Super Bowl.
Yeah, because they missed – that's a good question. They missed the playoffs in 02. Tom had a sore arm for most of the season and just wasn't throwing it with the authority that he had shown before and would show again after. And then, so 03 – they beat Carolina in a very high-scoring Super Bowl. And I still don't think anybody was looking at this as, well, this is, you know, two victories into a Super Bowl, victories into a dynasty. But we think the quarterback is pretty good. He's more than a game manager. He had started to really assert himself. And he played very well in that playoff game, that Super Bowl game against Carolina. I don't remember his numbers, but he threw for a lot of yards and had another 3-point victory with a late field goal to win it. And then the next year they beat Philadelphia, which was more of a defensive game. And I think it was after that point, you know, they were the first team, I mean, the second team rather, to win three in a 4-year period. Dallas in the 90s was the first team to do 3 out of 4. But then, you know, Santiago, they went 10 years without winning another Super Bowl. I mean, 10 years. Going from 04 to 14 with a bunch of championship game losses in between, two Super Bowl losses in between. And when they beat Seattle in 14, that made their Super Bowl record 4-2. If they had lost that game, which they should have, if Russell Wilson just handed the ball to Marshawn Lynch instead of throwing it to Malcolm Butler, they would have been 3-3 in Super Bowl. And all of a sudden we're saying, okay, they're a really good team. They got to 6 Super Bowls, but they only won half of them. You know, there's something missing from the resume there, but the fact that they won that to go to 4-2, and then they beat Atlanta, go to 5-2, then they lose to the Eagles in a game they should have won, be 5-3, and they finished up beating the Rams 6-3. Out of those first, let's see, 6 or 7 of them, those games could have gone either way. When they were sitting there at 3-2 after losing to the Giants twice, they easily could have been 0-5 because they won their first three by a field goal each time. And then they lost close games to the Giants. Or rather than being 0-5, they could have been 5-0. So being 3-2, it's like the odds evened out that they won some of the close games, they lost some of those close games. So 3-2 was about right considering how they played in those 5 games.
And was the relationship between Brady and Belichick, was that still good in those 10 years, even without winning the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think that they still had a good working relationship. I think the turning point, well, first of all, I think we start to look at Brady in a different light in 07 when he throws the 50 touchdowns and they go 16-0 and came within that David Tyree helmet catch of having the greatest single-season team in NFL history. By the time they won their 4th, I think Tom was tired of Belichick using him as an example of hard coaching and picking on him a lot in front of the team and team meetings and practices. That Tom wanted more. He's not a guy that needs to be patted on the back, but I think he just got tired of the way Belichick just didn't seem to acknowledge publicly and in front of the team, this guy might be the greatest quarterback in NFL history. He was still treating him as the 4th-string quarterback who made the team as a 6th-round rookie. And I think that was kind of the beginning of the end of his time there. You know, he's played another few years and he won another couple of Super Bowls, but I think that was kind of the turning point where Tom said that there has to be a better way. And he got to go to Tampa and he saw that the grass isn't necessarily greener because Tom wound up being, you know, kind of like the de facto coach there. He brought the Belichick way with him to Tampa because Bruce Arians really ran a loose ship.
Let's go back to the way Coach Belichick treated Brady. Was that some type of like mind games or a little tactic to motivate Brady to play harder?
Well, I think early on, Tom needed the coaching and he didn't mind it. he liked to be pushed. And but I think after he won a couple of Super Bowls, Belichick realized, well, this guy's got thick skin and he can take this. And if I can coach my quarterback who's won a couple of Super Bowls, if I can coach him that hard, then who in this room is going to feel they have a right to complain? And so I think that he used Brady as an example to the rest of the team. Hey, Tom can take it. What's your problem? And that, I think that sustained the dynasty in the early years, that he was able to get a lot out of all his players because he was able to coach them all hard because of Brady. So that was a big deal in the early years. And they got along really well because Tom did not mind that. But like I said, the more he accomplished, the less he appreciated the hard coaching.
Let's go into the split. I know those final couple years, well, like the way he left Brady, it was kind of mysterious. I don't think he said goodbye to Belichick in person. I think Robert Kraft, I think, talked to him, to Brady before he left. But How was that whole scenario like?
Well, I mean, Tom went through the 2019 season knowing it was his last year in New England, although the media, you know, was just guessing on what was going to happen, using the jumping off point to that being that he put his house on the market around training camp in 2019. So as much as Kraft probably would have liked for him to stay because they had a very close relationship, he deferred to his coach, who felt, you know, it was better to part with great players a year too early than a year too late. So when Tom made a decision right on the eve of free agency in 2020 during the pandemic, he lived right next door to Kraft. So he just, but they each had so much property that it wasn't necessarily walking distance between the houses. So he drove over to his house and told Kraft that he had made his mind up, that he was done. So they called Belichick. It was just more of a courtesy. Belichick probably knew at that point that Tom wasn't going to come back. And he told him he was leaving. They said some nice things to each other. They said nice things about each other in the statements they made. And then that was a Monday. And by Wednesday, Tom had agreed to play for the Bucs.
You did mention, and I heard you saying this, about Jimmy Garoppolo. Was that something that Brady was upset that he was in the team and potentially would replace Brady?
Well, Belichick had drafted quarterbacks prior to taking Garoppolo, but Tom never looked at any of them as a threat. When Bill used a second-round pick to take a potential successor to Brady rather than using that pick to improve the team right away, I think that Tom felt that Belichick looked at Garoppolo as the heir apparent. And Tom, he wasn't anywhere near even thinking about quitting. He was talking at that point about playing until he's 45, which is what he wound up doing. And by 2017, it was Garoppolo's last year of his contract. And I think Tom had made it known to Kraft that he would prefer for Garoppolo not to be around. And it was a good business decision to trade him because they were going to lose him as a free agent after the season. His contract was up. So he got a second-round pick. Belichick got a second-round pick for Garoppolo when he traded him to the 49ers. A lot of people thought he'd get more than that. But then he never drafted another quarterback that you would – I think he drafted one more quarterback after Garoppolo was gone, but wasn't anybody that they, you know, that was highly rated. In fact, I think – I can't even remember the guy's name. They switched him to wide receiver or running back in his second training camp. And then he was gone at that point after his second camp. But he never used a high-round pick on a quarterback until he took Mac Jones, and that was not until 2021. So Belichick did not have a succession plan in place, which was a big problem there.
Now Tom Brady goes to Tampa, Gary. What was his mindset? Like, he wanted to prove the world I could do it without Bill. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, I don't think that was his goal at that point. I mean, he wanted to play somewhere else, but I don't think proving he can win without Belichick after winning 6 Super Bowls in New England, I don't think that was his motivating factor. I think he wanted to go play somewhere else. He wanted to win a Super Bowl, but not despite Belichick. he just wants to, he, Tom loved to play and he felt he still had more left in the tank. And he did. I mean, he got the Bucks to the playoffs 3 years in a row. They got once they, each year they didn't progress as far in the playoffs as they did the year before, but he still made it 3 years in a row. And they probably should have got to at least the NFC Championship game in the second year. So, maybe in the back of his mind is like, okay, everybody was split on who's credit, who gets the credit in New England. Well, I'm going to show you, you know, maybe there was an unspoken competition between Belichick and Brady, who can win a Super Bowl first without the other. And I think the results are in on that one. It was kind of a landslide for Brady. But again, I don't think that was the motivation for him to continue to play. He wanted to keep playing because he loved to play.
Bill Belichick also moved, got let go of New England. Now he's coaching college football at UNC. What are your thoughts over that? I know it's only been 2-3 weeks he's been coaching, but what do you think is going to happen in this chapter of Bill Belichick's life?
Well, I think he picked the most volatile time in college sports history to go become a college coach for the first time, you know, with the NIL and the transfer portal. It's got to be a nightmare for these guys. You see guys, you see veteran coaches leaving college, like Nick Saban walked away from Alabama. Chip Kelly went from being the head coach at UCLA to being the offensive coordinator at Ohio State, and that was his own choice. He wasn't fired. He wasn't pushed out of UCLA. He just didn't want to have to deal with it. Now he's the offensive coordinator with the Raiders. So these guys, and Nick Saban is Belichick's best friend in coaching. He's leaving. And a year later, Belichick is going to college. If he can get the NIL stuff and the transfer portal and, you know, whatever he has to do to create synergy between those two, and he's a smart guy, he'll be able to figure it out. I think he'll win there as long as he can get a quarterback, because I think he'll have he'll be successful recruiting like linebackers and linemen and whatnot, because they'll look at Belichick as providing a great education in football and preparing them well to play in the NFL, which will, for most players, you know, that's the ultimate goal.
He also had a spat a couple of weeks ago where Bill Belichick said the no Patriots scouts are allowed in the building. He said because he's not allowed to go to the Patriots training facility. Mike Vrabel, who's the current coach of the Patriots, said that he is allowed. What was that spat about, you think?
I don't know where he got the idea that he's not welcome back. Now, I know he was there for the Brady Hall of Fame induction on June 12th, 2024. I was there. He got a rousing ovation. He gave a really nice speech. I don't know of any other times that he's wanted to go back to the Patriot building and was told, you can't come back here. I never heard of that. So I don't think he would have made it up, but I don't know where it's coming from. And I think it hurts his kids at North Carolina to not, now it's only one team and they have plenty of opportunities to watch tape or attend games, but you know, these kids want to audition for NFL jobs. And if Belichick is going to be banning, you know, teams from coming in and watching the practices, it's not in the best interest of his players. So maybe that'll get smoothed out, but I'd really be interested in where Belichick got the information that he was banned. He's been banned from the building.
Now Brady's retired. He is a minority owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. He's also on like the broadcast team on the weekends. And now, actually, about a week ago, Brady was in the coaching box for the Raiders this past week. Can you see a Brady, Belichick working together type of thing, maybe in a coaching or in a front office situation, or you think it's what we saw at the Patriots, it's what we saw?
Well, I do know that Brady got in touch with Belichick when he was looking to hire a head coach after he was named, you know, a minority owner in Las Vegas. But what hasn't come out is whether he was – now, he had already taken the job in Carolina at that point. So what hasn't been made clear is what was the conversation about. At that point, Belichick had a $10 million – buyout. It's now down to $1 million. But was Brady saying, I know you've only been there a couple of weeks, but you know, if you leave now, it gives them plenty of chance to hire another coach. We'll take care of the $10 million. Or was he just calling him for advice on how to structure an organization? I don't know the answer to that one. But the fact that Brady reached out to Belichick for any advice, I think is an indication that their relationship right now is probably better than it has been at any point, maybe except for the very beginning.
I don't know if you saw the Amazon Prime movie of Brady and his minority ownership of the Birmingham City Club in England. Brady was kind of hands on a lot with that soccer club.
I've heard that.
Yeah, he never played soccer, but he was texting back and forth with coaches and everything. Do you see Brady maybe coaching or has some type of coaching with the Raiders type of situation or another team?
No, I don't think he'll coach. He's making $37.5 million a year from Fox. No coaches are making that. And it's not nearly as much work to broadcast a game and even prepare for it. As nutty as he is preparing for games, it's not like preparing to coach a game. The real issue is whether this is a conflict of interest that the league is going to have to put an end to. Because seeing Brady sit in the coach's booth the other night with the headset on was just a horrible look. I mean, Santiago, think about this. He's doing Dallas at Chicago this weekend. And the following week, you know who the Bears are playing?
The Raiders.
So you're telling me he's not going to pick up information that he's going to pass on to the Raiders? You know, they can say, Ben Johnson can say all he wants about, I'm not going to tell him anything that he could use. I know Tom, I'm comfortable with him. It's a non-issue to me. Tom's not allowed to go to the facility and the production meetings he does virtually, but he's allowed on the field before the game. And I guarantee you he does a bunch of homework on the field talking to players and coaches. So I'm shocked when it came up that Tom was going to be a 5% owner that they didn't say, all right, we'd love to have you as an owner in this league. We think you'd be really valuable, but you got to make a choice. Either you want to be an owner or you want to be a broadcaster. We're not in a position to get you to stop broadcasting, but we don't have to approve your ownership. And they just let that slide by and they put a bunch of these rules and regulations in that I'm not even saying Brady did anything wrong, but he was kind of flaunting it the other night by being on a national TV game, having headsets on, and who knows if he was, you know, talking down to the field or not. We know that he was talking to the coaches.
Good points there. Before we go, Gary, what do you want the readers to get out of this book?
I think it really gives you a good behind-the-scenes look at the greatest dynasty the NFL's ever seen, with one of the most intriguing relationships between, like I mentioned before, the greatest quarterback and the greatest coach. There's a lot in that book that I didn't know going into my research. So I'd have to think there'll be a lot in there that most football fans don't know. And I think it's kind of a fun read. And you'll come to a decision whether you agree with mine or not by the time you finish reading the book on who you think deserves the most credit.
There you have it. And where can people get that book?
Everywhere. It's available starting this past Tuesday in the bookstores. But if you like to do your book shopping online, you go to Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com. You know, all those different services.
And we'll have the Brady versus Belichick book link right in the description. There you have it. Brady versus Belichick, the best duo, I think, in sports, to be honest, coach and player. I mean, you could say Phil Jackson, Jordan, but this one I think is a little bit more special. Gary, what's the good place for people to reach you online?
You can just at Twitter, at Gary Myers, MYERSNY, like New York. So Gary Myers, NY. And I always respond to people who like to reach out to me, as long as we keep it civil and there's no name calling, no insulting of anybody's intelligence. And I encourage people to do that.
And we got to have you back to talk about your New York Giants and when's the next time they win the Super Bowl.
Let's concentrate on the next time they win a game.
I agree. Well, there you have it, Gary Myers. I appreciate you coming on to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Thanks a lot for having me on, Santiago.